taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I don't know about you, but I've about had it with the COVID vaccine mandate craziness. I mean, it's a three-ring circus. So I've decided today that that's the last time I'm going to mention COVID or the vaccine or the mandates. We've got to look at something else or I'm just going to go completely crazy. But then again, it didn't take me too long to find something else that would drive most people completely crazy. Now, I've really stayed away from all the articles and all the information about the Rittenhouse trial because I didn't have good data as to what actually happened. You know, he said one thing, this guy said something else, these people said something else. There was a lot of hearsay, but there wasn't a lot of data. And last week, we started getting data in the trial. And, well, let's just say that I found it part shocking, part enlightening, and fair bit amount of frustrating. Now, let's start with the basics. From what I've gleaned from the trial so far, here's what happened. In Wisconsin, Kenosha, Wisconsin, remember in 2020, there were these riots. And I didn't get a good reason why, but as I understand it, I guess Kyle Rittenhouse was originally from that area, knew somebody in that area, and offered to go help with the cleanup. He shows up, and while there, well, he was concerned for his safety, so he had a gun. Now, I've gotten some conflicting information. As I understand it, he didn't bring it with him across state lines. It may have been purchased for him by somebody else, which, well, that's another issue. But he got, an, I believe it was an AR-15, while he was there. During his time in Kenosha, again, he went there, according to his own words, to help someone clean up after the riots. He was attacked. He was challenged by somebody with a gun. He had his life threatened. He was chased. He was knocked down. And in this, he shot three people, two of whom died. Now, of course, he's been vilified, defamed, slandered by the media. Again, they don't know what's going on. They simply assume, well, it's a white guy with a gun. It must be racist. It must be vigilantism. It must be crazy. It must be that crazy white dude with guns at it again. Of course, they didn't seem to mention the fact that all three of those who were shot were also white. So I don't think it's racism. I don't think it's white supremacy. Vigilante, well, you know, he was, had a gun to protect himself. Now, I don't know about you, but the idea of being able to protect myself is something I cherish. And, you know, somebody may turn around and think that they may not like that idea, but guess what? Not only do I have a natural right of self-defense, I have a constitutionally right, protected right to use arms to do so. So it shouldn't really be a question of what gun or where. It really was a question, should be a question of, did Kyle Rittenhouse, was he exercising self-defense or was he the initiator of violence? Now, again, I'm not a lawyer, but every lawyer I've talked to and everybody familiar with self-defense recognizes that in all 50 states, the prerequisite for using lethal force, that's lethal force of any kind, guns, knives, baseball bats, vehicles, right, is there must be an imminent threat of death or serious bodily injury to an innocent party. Right? That's the basic rule. Someone must be about to be killed or seriously injured, and they must not have been the initiator of violence, right? It's use the example, you know, if you walk up to somebody and punch them in the nose and they pull a gun, you cannot claim self-defense. You initiated the violence. It's one of the reasons why those who are deeply involved in self-defense always tell you to be wary about coming to the defense of a third party when you don't know what's going on. You have to be careful because you don't know what preceded this. So here we have Mr. Rittenhouse, a young man who has who was in Kenosha, Wisconsin. He used a firearm, he believed, in self-defense. And ever since then, he has been the bête noire for everybody who dislikes guns. I mean, it's been what this poor boy has been through, regardless of the outcome of the trial, has been awful. And in fact, if he doesn't have a list as long as his arm of as people he's going to sue, I think his legal team has let him down. I mean, it's truly bad. But let's get to the case. Now, some of the first reports I heard about the case were truly shocking. Not because of what young Mr. Rittenhouse had done. No. Based on the actions of the prosecutor. So let's start with some Constitution. Now, the Sixth Amendment, the Fourth through Eighth Amendments of the Constitution are the Due Process Clause, and the Sixth Amendment deals with criminal prosecutions. It reads, "In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously attained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, and have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense." These are some of the most basic rights, and I believe most Americans are familiar with these. Keep these in mind as we get going. So one of the first things I heard actually had to do with the actions of the prosecution. Let's start with Brandon Kremen. He's an FBI technician, and he was called to the stand by the prosecution to testify about footage he captured from an airplane as he flew over Kenosha. Right? So you have FBI in an airplane flying over Kenosha, Wisconsin, and gathering information. Basically, you know, searching around, gathering information, and he was called to testify. But you see, there was a little problem. You see, Agent Kremen refused to provide the plane's tail number. See, he was cross-examined by Rittenhouse's attorney, and he wanted the plane's tail number. Why? Well, there are records about airplanes and where they are and where they fly and things like flight plans. And let's just say that I believe the Rittenhouse defense suggested that the FBI was withholding video evidence. In other words, you have this video of all the video that the plane captured. You have all of it that involved the time and place of where Mr. Rittenhouse was. They're claiming that the FBI was withholding evidence that might be exculpatory. That's a fancy word for saying it might be beneficial to the defense. Now, in what we still call our justice system, I have a hard time calling it a justice system. It seems more like it's just a system. The accused is assumed innocent until proven guilty. And the prosecution, the state, must provide all evidence to the defense so that they can defend against it. So here you have the FBI has some data they've collected. The prosecution has called one of the agents to the stand. And on cross-examination, that agent is now withholding information. And the Rittenhouse defense thinks that maybe they're withholding actual video evidence of the shooting. Now, understand, this is important because the difference between self-defense and criminal shooting all has to do with the context. So if the prosecution is withholding evidence that potentially shows, yes, you know, Rittenhouse had very good reason to believe he was in threat of imminent death or serious bodily injury, well, that's actually criminal misconduct. It's prosecutorial misconduct. It in itself is a crime. And I'm struggling to come up with a reason why the FBI would refuse to provide the plane number, the plane's tail number, its registration number. I don't know. You know, it might be like if you were on trial and someone wanted the license plate number of your car so they could check it for parking tickets, I guess. Whatever it is, the FBI refused to provide this information. And the judge, well, basically said, we're going to strike the testimony. He said, he referred to what they were doing as cloak and dagger stuff. Now, there's a bit of a problem, right? Because, okay, they did strike the testimony. I believe the defense and the district attorney came to agreement that the jury would be told that they were to disregard all the testimony from Agent Kramen. But you see, you can't unring that bell. Even if it is, quote unquote, stricken and they're not supposed to use it, you've got that seed in there. Now, the sad part is at this point, well, I shouldn't say sad part, the fact is the seed may be more of, well, gee, is the prosecution playing fast and loose? I mean, we're dealing with the future of a young man. He's on trial for, what is it, first-degree reckless homicide, first-degree intentional homicide, and attempted first-degree intentional homicide, not to mention other lesser charges. If he's convicted, he'll be lucky if he ever sees the outside of a jail cell. So to have a prosecution withhold that, a prosecution witness withhold information that at least the defense thinks may be exculpatory, that's a little concerning. But it seems the prosecution really just went right off the rails. Now, as I understand, I'm not a lawyer, but as I understand it, the first rule of questioning a witness on the stand is you never ask a question you don't know the answer to. If not in detail, you know the broad strokes of the answer. Right? You don't want to be surprised by a witness. It looks, not only does it look bad, it can really destroy your case. So when pathologist Dr. Doug Kelly with the Milwaukee County Medical Examiner's Office testified that the wounds Mr. Rosenbaum had suffered, the first man Rittenhouse shot, lined up with video showing that his hand was either touching or in close proximity with the end of the barrel, well, that doesn't sound very good if you're the prosecutor. See, if you've got a rifle and someone is reaching for it, that's an assumption that they're going to do bad things to you with it. They went so far as to say the soot stippling around the palm area of Rosenbaum's hand and around the little finger showed that, yes, his hand was in close proximity. If it wasn't actually grabbing the muzzle, it was close to it. This is just further proof this is after showing video of Rittenhouse being chased, right? Rittenhouse was being chased by Mr. Rosenbaum through a parking lot. They have drone footage and they have witness testimony showing Rosenbaum chasing Rittenhouse. And they have evidence that Rittenhouse turned and fired shortly after someone else fired nearby. So again, the prosecution's not looking too good because now we have more evidence that says, yes, you know, Rittenhouse wasn't chasing Rosenbaum. He was being chased. He was in fear. And hearing a shot fire, he turned. Rosenbaum grabbed for the gun, and he was shot. Now, the next piece that came to mind, the next piece I heard about, and I had to go searching for the video, and I found it. And it deals with a serious misunderstanding of the Fifth Amendment, or at least a misapplication. I believe the defense had put Mr. Rittenhouse on the stand, which meant he was open to cross-examination by the prosecution, and the prosecution is cross-examining him. But he started asking about why he didn't comment before the trial. The defense objected. The judge had the jury escorted out of the room. And then we have this interchange involving the prosecutor, the defense, and the judge.
He's commented on my client's right to remain silent.
No, Your Honor, I am making the point that after hearing everything in the case, now he's tailoring his story to what has already been introduced.
The problem is, this is a grave constitutional violation for you to talk about the defendant's silence. And that is, and you're right on the borderline, and you may be over, but it better stop.
Understood.
I can't think of the case, the initial case on it, but this is not permitted.
Now, the first voice you heard there was obviously the defense attorney, and you heard the judge admonishing the prosecutor, who said no, he would not do this anymore. Now, I'm not quite sure what the order of events. I haven't seen a comprehensive video where I could put this together, but it appears that the prosecutor went so far as to comment, to make a point in front of the jury about Mr. Rittenhouse exercising his right to remain silent. And let's just say it didn't go over very well.
Why would you think that made it okay for you, without any advance notice, to bring this matter before the jury? I was astonished when you began your examination by commenting on the defendant's post-arrest silence. That's basic law. It's been basic law in this country for 40 years, 50 years. I have no idea why you would do something like that. And it gives, I'll leave it at that.
Now, if you look at the video, the judge is pissed. It's quite obvious that he is biting his tongue. I don't know the details. I'm not in the judge's head. But this judge was very, 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 very unhappy. That's a very important point. See, most people believe that the Fifth Amendment, when you plead the Fifth, we talk about your right against self-incrimination. But you see, that's not what the Fifth Amendment says. The Fifth Amendment to the Constitution says, no person shall, and it goes through a whole bunch of lists, and on that list says, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. It has nothing to do with whether or not you're guilty. Your silence is not a sign of guilt. We've all seen the TV dramas, the police procedurals, and you see the officer, well, if you don't answer, you must have something to hide. No, it doesn't work that way. And it is sad when I see people use a desire to remain silent as if it's an admission of guilt. It is not. And to have the prosecution, apparently not once, but possibly twice, to question why someone would remain silent. You know, we've all heard the Miranda warning. It comes from the case. It's what Judge was saying about 40 or 50 years. It's the Miranda case. The case said that law enforcement has a duty to inform you of your rights, including your right to remain silent. And to have the prosecution infringe on that, not once, but it looks like twice. I bet the judge was not happy. Now, there's been a lot of speculation about, well, why? Why would the prosecution do this? Well, I found an interesting clip of law professor Alan Dershowitz. Now, listen, Dershowitz is a fine legal mind. I think constitutionally he's questionable, but he has a fine legal mind. And, well, he pointed something interesting out.
First of all, let me tell you what's really going on here. What's really going on is that the prosecutor wants a mistrial. He wants a mistrial without prejudice because he doesn't think the trial is going his way. The judge doesn't want to be the one to declare a mistrial because he's not going to be able to go back and get immunity. He wants the jury to acquit. And so what the judge is angry at is that the prosecutor is trying to put him in the position of creating a mistrial, which then the prosecutor says, hey, it's the judge's fault. It's not my fault. I've seen this tactic used by prosecutors before. That's why the judge has the power to dismiss the case with prejudice, but don't want to do that. They want to have the jury acquit. They don't want to acquit. So this is even a worse ethical violation, possibly, than what the judge has said. But the judge doesn't want to surface it because the judge doesn't want to say, oh, you want to provoke a mistrial. But that is what I think is going on.
So, you know, again, this was on Sean Hannity's Fox program. That's where I got the clip. And I think Dershowitz has an interesting point. And again, I'm not a lawyer. He has a lot more experience with lawyers. He looks at this as an intentional act to bail out of a bad situation, that the prosecution has so badly handled this case. You have prosecution witnesses contradicting the prosecution's story. You have a set of facts. You know, you have the prosecution witness potentially withholding information. And now you have the prosecution in a blatant violation of the Constitution. It's something that, again, this is basic law school 101. Why? I don't know. I can't read the prosecution's mind. But it does appear their case is going very, very badly. And according to Mr. Dershowitz, it is not unheard of for prosecutors to play some games to get a mistrial because they don't want to have the loss on their record. They'd rather have a mistrial. See, if it's a mistrial, well, the judge did it. It wasn't my fault. The judge had the mistrial. It's one of the reasons why judges have the power, if they declare a mistrial, to do so with prejudice. Now, what is prejudice? Well, back to the Fifth Amendment, you have a right to not be held in jeopardy of life or limb more than once for the same offense. We call it double jeopardy. And while it's often misused in legal circles in this country, the basic idea is once the jury was seated, Mr. Rittenhouse was in jeopardy of life and limb. He was on the hook. He was on a trial, and his future was now in the hands of a jury. So to try him again for the same crime is a violation of the Fifth Amendment. Well, they get away with this by saying, well, the question then becomes, was the act of the trial prejudicial to the defense? In other words, this mistrial, what did it prejudice the defense's opportunity for a fair trial or not? If the answer is yes, double jeopardy is attached. You've already prejudiced the jury. You've prejudiced the pool. He cannot get a fair trial anymore. Therefore, the charges are dropped. As opposed to a mistrial without prejudice, which means, you know, we got started and then somewhere along the line, before we really got into it, as I understand it, something happened. We need to declare a mistrial so we can seat a new jury. And but it hasn't prejudiced the case for the defense. It appears that the prosecution may want the judge to dismiss without prejudice so that they can take a second bite at the apple, which would be another gross violation of Mr. Rittenhouse's rights. He is in jeopardy of life and limb. He is on trial. As I understand it, the prosecution has actually closed their case. They've presented their entire case. This is the defense providing their case. So the only thing the judge could do is declare a mistrial with prejudice. Now, why does he not want to do that? I'm not going to think for the judge, but from the defendant's standpoint, if you're winning a case, do you really want it left up in the air with a mistrial? Let's say you are you're playing a game of chess, and you are just shellacking your opponent, and your opponent offers a draw. It's the way the chess is played, right? If two players are so equally matched that no one can really win over the other, one of them will say, "How about a draw?" Now, if you are in a close match, maybe you'll accept the draw. But if you're shellacking your opponent, you have no reason to accept the draw. Well, to translate that here, the defense is shellacking the prosecution, at least it appears to me. The last thing the defense wants is to go through this all again, to put Mr. Rittenhouse through further media abuse, personal abuse, through another trial. But if the judge declares a mistrial with prejudice, well, then Mr. Rittenhouse is never really exonerated. There is no not guilty verdict. He will spend the rest of his life with this cloud of, well, you know, he did this, but you know, he got away on a technicality because of a mistrial. Do you see now why I don't trust our legal system? Now, so far, this judge, what I've seen, again, I haven't seen much of it, but what I've seen, this judge does seem to be upholding justice and upholding the rights of Mr. Rittenhouse. And I am glad to see it. I am very glad to see it. Not because I'm for Rittenhouse or against Rittenhouse. I believe the purpose of a judge is to make sure that the rights of those involved are being protected, and it appears that this judge is doing that. But it says quite a bit about why I don't call this a justice system, but I call it justice system. If a prosecutor can get away with such malfeasance, such misconduct without consequence, we'll have to see if there's any consequence for this prosecutor, whether it be the loss of the trial or further consequence from his malfeasance. Now, I have to head out to break. Before I do, I want you to please head out to HealthyCell.com. You know, Healthy Cells reinvented the vitamin. Forget a handful of pills. Take this nice gel. Mix it in food and drink. Hey, just take it directly. It tastes pretty good. They have several different formulas based on your needs. Now, I told you before, I've been on the road for a week, and you get the crud. I mean, everybody who travels for work knows that you tend to come back and you feel kind of icky. Well, guess what? I came back. I spent a week in Florida. I can't tell you how many hands I shook, how many people I talked to, how many people I was up close and personal with. And I came home. I feel fine. No sniffles, no cough, no nothing. And part of the reason is Healthy Cells Immune Super Boost. Keep your immune system healthy. Whether you're fighting COVID, I promise I wouldn't talk about COVID, whether you're fighting, no matter what you're fighting. And as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 20% off your first order. Just go to healthycell.com/outloud or go to healthycell.com and be sure to use OutLoud at checkout to get that 20% off your first order.
I'm excited to talk about a new product from Healthy Cell, AC11. This is a patented bioactive extract of Uncaria tomentosa from the Amazon rainforest. It supports cell DNA repair and health span. It's a dietary supplement. I'm excited to try it. Many are interested in longevity and attenuation of senescence. We know that telomere length and other biologic measures are related to senescence in clinical and preclinical studies, particularly of animal models. And I can tell you as a doctor, dietary supplements do hold the promise of attenuating repair and damage in our body due to stress, physical wear and tear, sunlight, etc. And there's a tremendous opportunity for supplements to help us in this area. And so Healthy Cell has brought a product to market for you to try as part of your health portfolio. So please go to healthycell.com and in the promotional code, list out loud for 20% off your first purchase of products from Healthy Cell. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
It was a vision that gave birth to a unique multimedia platform that would combine classic talk radio, great writers, and memorable podcasts and videos. AmericaOutloud.com is a conservative leader in a field that is predominantly run by far-left progressive globalists. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, and finally we're talking about something other than the dreaded C word. That's right, we're talking about the Kyle Rittenhouse trial and the drama. I mean, Perry Mason, Matlock, you wouldn't believe it if this were a courtroom drama on TV with all the twists and turns and prosecutorial meltdowns. It's been interesting, but it's also been infuriating. It makes me wonder the state of our justice system and what are your chances of getting justice in a system like this? You know, again, I give credit to the judge. He seems to be standing up when the prosecution's playing a little fast and loose with the rights of the defendant. And I'm glad he does. But it makes me wonder, what would have happened if Mr. Rittenhouse had gotten a different judge? Maybe one who doesn't like guns or feels that what Mr. Rittenhouse did was untoward. Now, maybe this judge doesn't like guns. I would love to see judges where we don't know and we don't care what they think about a topic. All I want them to do is listen to what's going on and make sure both sides are getting their rights protected. But I've seen enough judges in their opinions willing to abuse the rights to get to an end that I am glad Mr. Rittenhouse has received a judge that seems willing to protect his life. You know, I've heard a lot of reports about, you know, people talking about Mr. Rittenhouse breaking down on the stand while being questioned about his actions back in 2020. I see, and I can understand. I personally have never taken the life of another human being. I can't imagine that does not impact you, especially to have a young man in that situation. I can't imagine what it's like. It is obvious that he has, he's going to have to deal with this the rest of his life. Regardless of the outcome of this trial, he's going to have to live with knowing that he took the life of two human beings. He may have been justified in doing so, but he did it. But what I found absolutely vile and disgusting was the reaction of certain media personnel to Mr. Rittenhouse's testimony. Tara Dublin, blue checkmark Twitter, she posted a picture of Mr. Rittenhouse crying on the stand and said this, And that's the same face Kyle Rittenhouse will make during his first visit in the prison shower. Is that what the American media, was that what American society has fallen to? Whether you think what he did was right or wrong, do you really believe Mr. Rittenhouse deserves to be raped in a prison shower? I'm sorry, that's a level of disgusting. That's a level of inhuman hatred I recognize I cannot comprehend. For political purposes, for media purposes, to promote the idea that someone deserves to be raped. You know, if someone were to claim that Ms. Dublin should be raped for making such a comment, I would be just as outraged at that. This is disgusting. Now, granted, we do have freedom of speech. We do have freedom of the press, which means Tara Dublin is perfectly within her rights to express this vile and vulgar idea publicly. I'm not opposed to that. Some of you may be shocked, but I'm not. Because this tells me this is one person I will refuse to pay any attention to. See, the thing we seem to forget about freedom of speech is it's not simply my ability to speak or to publish freedom of the press. When I express my ideas, other people learn about them. That means when other people express their ideas, we can learn about them. One of the questions I had last week during one of the talks I was given, I love doing Q&As, and one of the questions I have, it's one I've gotten quite frequently, has to do with, do private businesses have the right to not serve me for whatever reason they decide? I mean, I'm old enough to remember when stores used to have signs in there, in the window, in the door. Well, we reserve the right to refuse service. And that's kind of gone by the wayside. And we act like if I can force someone to act in a way I think is appropriate, well, it's a good way. So everybody should be allowed. That's a good thing. Always seeming to forget that the 800-pound bully of government that can be used to force someone to serve black people or to serve gay people. Or to not discriminate based on headgear is the same one that can be forced to, that can force you to bake a cake for someone that violates your religious belief. They can have a Christian bake a Satanist cake or a transgender cake. That can force a Jew to make a pork sandwich. Or to force a Muslim to be open during Ramadan or to not close during prayer time. See, I look at these and I say, Tara, thank you for the information. You are definitely someone I wish to not hear from ever again. I have received information from her that I find valuable. And I want other people to see just how vile and disgusting she can be. Hopefully others will see this and be just as turned off at the idea of listening to anything she says as I am, which is the proper reaction to the vile acts, the hateful acts, the disgusting acts of others. You know what? I don't want anything to do with you. Now, while Ms. Dublin's tweet may be the most brazen of violations of any consideration of due process, of any consideration of others, she's not the only one. See, it appears that Facebook has decided, you know what? They're not going to show search results for Kyle Rittenhouse anymore. So if you're using Facebook's platform and you're searching for information on this case, you can't find it. Now, according to, let's see, who's this? Alan Evans, of the Daily Caller. He searched Facebook. Now, first of all, I've been booted off of Facebook, so I don't have a Facebook account. I can't even get a Facebook account. That's how bad it has gotten. But apparently they searched for Rittenhouse's full name, and it yields only a message informing them that Facebook did not find any results and a prompt maybe to check one's spelling. Now, why? Why is this important? Well, again, if Facebook doesn't wish to share information about Kyle Rittenhouse, okay, that's their prerogative. On the other hand, if they have agreements, verbal agreements, contractual agreements, advertising agreements with people to show their stuff. I mean, imagine this. You're a news outlet and you post stuff on Facebook with advertising. Facebook gets ad money for showing your stuff. But when you do a report on Kyle Rittenhouse, Facebook refuses to share that information. Now, sure, Facebook is costing themselves advertising money, but they're also costing the news outlet money. Now, again, Facebook is still a privately owned company. Yes, it's publicly traded. It's owned by its stockholders. If they wish to be evil, bigoted, one-sided, slovenly people that just can't bear to see any information they don't like, good riddance. There's a reason why I haven't bothered trying to get back. At first, I tried to get back on Facebook, and then I stopped because I realized something. While there are millions of people on Facebook that I believe would benefit from the information I bring, while there are many thousands I believe would actually want to read my posts, watch my videos, I'm not willing to fund Facebook to do it. I would much rather find these people and encourage them to go elsewhere, to find competitors of Facebook that don't censor their searches, that don't believe that they don't need to know. Facebook is not open in free speech. They can claim it all they want. Facebook is not about free speech. They've proven it over and over again. I believe it's about time the people of the world, if not simply in America, realize that Facebook is not a faithful player when it comes to disseminating news. Think of it this way. Let's say you're scrolling through your Facebook newsfeed. Now, if they're filtering Kyle Rittenhouse information from the search, do you think they're going to put it in your newsfeed? And if they are, do you think they're going to weight it based on the actual amount of data that's being promoted about Kyle Rittenhouse? I mean, think of it this way. Wouldn't you want to know about the prosecutorial malfeasance in the Rittenhouse case? Facebook doesn't have to promote what Kyle Rittenhouse did to report on the case. No, they don't believe you need to know. They don't believe you should be allowed to know. And I am curious, if you have Facebook, if news about the Rittenhouse trial has showed up in your newsfeed. It's just one more example of, do we trust Facebook? Now, I have a very simple policy. I don't trust any social media. Sure, I post on YouTube and Twitter and where else? I do Gab. I do Rumble. I'm starting to look at Locals. But I do that to get information out. I don't trust these to curate news for me. I curate it for myself. I pull in information from multiple sources. I filter it. I sort it. I pick out the ones I want to investigate. I look at the articles to see if they're accurate. Then I bring that information to you. Am I going to be perfect all the time? No. I'm a human being. But to me, this is just one other example why we have to stop outsourcing our lives to other people. I talk often about expecting somebody else to protect your rights. What about expecting someone else to find news for you? What about having somebody else pick what you are and are not allowed to find out about, what you are and are not allowed to learn, what you are and are not allowed to study? Now, I don't want Facebook shut down. I don't want them broken up. I don't want them controlled or regulated by the federal government. But the reason I'm on Gab and Locals and others is because I don't want to be dependent on just a handful of companies in controlled by people who don't think I have the right to speak. I want more options out there. Yes, it's a bit more work. It's also a great opportunity. One of the tools I use allows me to share my posts on multiple platforms. I use Buffer. At least I'm currently using Buffer. And what it allows me to do is to take a post. I can take an article I like or a post, and I can have it sent out to multiple locations at once. It goes to LinkedIn. It goes to Twitter. I forget where else it goes. And the only problem with that is Buffer only supports a limited number of platforms. I understand why. Where do they invest their resources? So it still worked for me to go through and do Gab and eventually Locals and others. But is it worth it? So what's the opportunity? Well, if you have a social media platform, a social media sharing platform that will allow me to schedule posts to multiple platforms that supports more platforms than Buffer, I want to hear about it. I'm looking for just such a platform. I'm looking for a place that will help me distribute my information as far and as wide as possible. And guess what? If you do a good job at it, I don't expect it to be free. I'm willing to pay so that I'm not the product, so that you don't have to collect information about me. It's an opportunity for the people who have the technical skills and the foresight to see, hey, if these places are limiting your ability to share information, how do we make it more capable of sharing information? And if you remember me talking before about the FBI withholding information, this article just popped up. Senator Ron Johnson has apparently sent a letter to FBI Director Chris Wray requesting information about how FBI uses surveillance aircraft during riots and protests and what it does with the footage. I find that very interesting. You see, there are reports apparently of the FBI using aircraft to watch unrest in Ferguson, Missouri in 2014, Baltimore in 2015, Black Lives Matter riots in Kenosha in 2020, which brings up an interesting question. Where is all that footage? What is it being used for? See, one of the problems we have is we've gotten into our minds that the Fourth Amendment protects our right to privacy. It doesn't. Not exactly. She says you have a right to be secure from unreasonable search and seizure. It doesn't say anything about privacy. Now, there's an aspect of privacy to it, but if you are secure from unreasonable search, what are the limits of government's ability to use surveillance to watch you, to search your actions without cause? Now, this gets into a very interesting question because you have an example like, okay, you have riots, you have demonstrations, and are we collecting data so that we can prosecute those who commit crimes? There actually gets to be a little interesting spot, and I don't have the time to really go in depth on that at the moment, but what constitutes an unreasonable search? And in Senator Johnson's question, what do they do with that? What do they do with the data they've collected, with the video they've collected? Are they saving it for use in future prosecutions? Is it destroyed? And what access does the public have to this data? Because access to public access to data, that's a very important thing to consider. what is government's requirement to protect the privacy of those that are in those videos? Do they have a requirement? I don't know. Like I said, I don't really have the time to go deep into that today, but maybe that's a good thing to ask in the future. Because one thing we're seeing, and I want to link the prosecutor's conduct in the Rittenhouse case, the tweet about what's going to happen to Rittenhouse, the Facebook filtering data, this question about the FBI gathering video surveillance, and then what do they do with it? With a very interesting story that just popped a couple days ago. Now, if you're listening to this program, I'm assuming you're familiar with a gentleman by the name of James O'Keefe. He's the founder of Project Veritas. They came to prominence in finding out the malfeasance of Acorn and that whole scandal. And they've spent the last several years collecting data, primarily video and audio data, of bad actors. They apparently do it by finding whistleblowers and getting them to record everything from Planned Parenthood selling baby parts to political officials acting illegally. Well, recently, several members of Project Veritas had their homes raided, and now Mr. O'Keefe has had his home raided. According to reports, there was an early morning raid on his apartment. He was assaulted by 10 FBI agents. Although he did open the door for them, they were prepared to break in his door. They had a battering ram. They had blindingly white lights. He was taken into cuffs, placed against the wall. He had his phone taken. He had data and records taken. A lot's been going on. And a few days ago, a federal judge ordered the Department of Justice to stop extracting data from his phones. So we get back to that unreasonable search. What was the FBI searching for? I would love to see that warrant. See, it requires a few things. It requires probable cause supported by oath or affirmation. What was the probable cause for a raid, for using 10 FBI agents or more, for doing something, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning or early morning? Why go through all of that? Why put Mr. O'Keefe in handcuffs? What threat has he been of violence to anyone? Where was the, did the warrant include confiscating his phones? His phones with privileged information on it? Makes you wonder what data you want to keep on your phone nowadays. So at least at this point, a federal court judge has ordered the DOJ to stop extracting data. This is Judge Annalisa Torres from the Southern District of New York. Now, there was more to this order as well. See, James O'Keefe has filed a motion for appointment of a special master, someone designated to do purely investigative work, someone to oversee what's going on, someone outside of the DOJ, or at least not associated with his case. And Judge Torres has ordered the DOJ to prepare a response to the motion by today. And then Mr. O'Keefe has a few days for his reply. I just realized I made a mistake. It wasn't his apartment. Mr. O'Keefe lives in a home in Westchester County, just north of New York City. But it's important. It's like, yes, I want to see some of these answers. Was Mr. O'Keefe given a copy of his warrant to make sure that the agents were following the law, to make sure the warrant was even valid? Did the warrant include phones and other records? Was it specific? Did it specifically detail where they were to search and what they were to seize? Now, on the one hand, this is very disconcerting. the idea of weaponizing federal law enforcement is nothing new. It's been going on for decades. The ability of an administration to use the levers of power for their own political advantage, not anything new, but extremely dangerous and, to me, concerning. But of all the people they would do this against, James O'Keefe seems like one they wouldn't have wanted to target. Now, I don't know about you. I've not always been 100% with what Project Veritas has done. But I'm glad that if the FBI is being used as a Gestapo, as a enforcement squad, as a brute squad, at least they went after somebody that has the backbone to stand up to them. Now, before I go, a couple things I want to ask. I'm considering doing a regular Q&A episode. So if you have questions and you'd like them answered, let me know. What you can do is go to the website, constitutionstudy.com. On the menu bar, you'll see Ask a Question. And what I'll do is I'll put there'll be a little note in there you can flag that says for the radio program. And ask those questions, and I will gather several of them together, and I'll do a whole episode of just answering questions. If it's something you'd like to see regularly, keep sending me questions, and I'll keep doing it. And please don't forget the Knowing Your Rights tour, constitutionstudy.com/tour. I'm still looking for dates. I can add more dates to the schedule. I've got a couple of places that I'm trying to work out schedules with, probably into early next year, early 2022. But if you'd like me to come speak to your group to do Q&A with them, by all means, just fill out the form at the bottom of the page. I'd love to talk with you about it. And please be sure to make AmericaOutLoud.com your daily stop for all the latest news and happenings. We need to all do our part. Share the stories, the articles, the podcasts, their videos. They're there for you to use and to share. Do so so that we can help secure the blessings of liberty both today and for our future.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day.